Again, thank you to everyone. We will call this meeting to order and let the record reflect. It's about 2 or 3 minutes after 2 o'clock, and this is Tuesday, February 24th, 2009. Let the record reflect that there is a quorum, and present to my left is Senator Davis, and present to my right, Senator Meyer and Senator Thomas, and myself, Senator Pascvan. I understand Senator Bundy will be with us momentarily. Please turn off all of your cell phones, even on vibrate. They do interfere with the recording equipment, so we do request that you completely turn your phones off. The purpose of today's meeting will hopefully we can take up the following legislation: Senate Bill 1 relating to Alaska's minimum wage, and Senate Bill 84 relating to ADA bonding limits and confidentiality. Thank you for joining us today. And again, we did have a conflict, so we are starting a little bit later than we had hoped to today. And I would like to start the meeting out addressing a little bit different than we had originally planned. I'd like to start out with Senate Bill 1 and present let the record reflect. We're joined now by Senator Bundy, so we do have the entire committee present with us today. And I would like to start with Senate Bill 1 and Senator Thomas. We have a committee substitute. Would you please?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move we adopt the CS for Senate Bill 1, working draft 26-LS006/E, and object for the purposes of discussion.
And any objections to that? Seeing none, we now have the committee substitute before the Labor and Commerce Committee. And so for purposes of understanding what the committee substitute has done is essentially we have presented that the Alaska's minimum wage would be $1 above the federal minimum wage. And in reviewing that over the last week or so, what I found it interesting this last weekend, I was at the Alaska Outdoor Council, and they had a flag that was part of the Alaska statehood parade in Alaska 50 years ago, and they had in that they had a 4-cent stamp on the left-hand side of it and a 42-cent stamp on the right-hand side of it with the 50-year pin in the middle. If we had used that type of proportionality for the last 50 years, where Alaska's minimum wage above the federal minimum wage was 50 cents then, that 10 times increase in the price of a stamp would equate to approximately a $5 per hour Alaska addition in addition to the federal minimum wage. And so it kind of got me thinking a little bit on that issue as well. Secondarily, I went back and I wanted to, and as part of the packets before all the committee members, we do have the federal minimum wage over the years, and trying to figure out what the very first Senate and was looking at or thinking when they decided to put 50 cents an hour on top of the federal minimum wage. And at the time that they said the 50 cents was going to be the Alaska premium, the federal minimum wage was $1. So essentially there, the very first legislature 50 years ago said that the Alaska premium for the minimum wage would be approximately 50% of the federal minimum wage. Again, if we made that proportional to 2009, at the 2009 federal minimum wage, that would be 7.25. If we applied that same principle to now, we would add $3.62% of that 50% of the federal minimum wage, which would give us about $10.87 an hour. So if we used either of those methods, the rationale would be $10.87 under one rationale or $12.25 under the other rationale. But then at the same time, we've heard from the business community that these are troubling times, not just in Alaska and in the nation. And so we don't want to impose too much at one time. So we're submitting the committee substitute at $1 above the federal minimum wage, and believe that that's appropriate, and again, taking effect January 1, 2010. So with that in mind...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Bundy.
If you could just, in my reading of the bill, it does not involve a automatic escalator for cost of living. Am I correct in that?
Yes, Senator Bundy. There is the cost of living allowance has been removed, so it is just $1 above the federal minimum wage.
Thank you.
And with that in mind, Senator Thomas?
I therefore thank you, Mr. Chairman. I remove my objection.
And Mr. Chairman, I have an amendment when you're ready to address amendments.
And what is, Senator Bundy, what is your amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's been distributed to the committee, but I have some other comments.
I understand what it is. So,
Does the members have a copy? It's a TIP credit amendment.
I think someone needs to object, so I'll object to explanation.
But I would move. Object. I would move amendment number one.
And I would object for purposes of explanation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is this different than what I already have?
I don't think so. It's just a current copy.
Same numbers.
If you didn't have one in your packet.
Brief at ease. We have Senator Bundy's amendment before us, and I believe, Senator Bundy, would you care to explain the intent of the amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Here's some additional information that perhaps will help explain the impact of the amendment. Mr. Chairman, we heard a substantial amount of testimony from people who are in the hospitality industry, and from that testimony, I gathered that there were a good number of people who are in the hospitality industry, the serving staff, the wait staff, their wages are often in a $20 an hour category. If indeed then this minimum wage applied to the $20 an hour employee, they would in effect get a raise while the back of the house was already working for more than minimum wage, but substantially less than $20 an hour, would not get a raise. This seems to be of great concern to people in the hospitality industry, and so I offer the amendment. To show you the effect, I have this chart that I've handed out, and assuming someone makes tips that averages $15 an hour, they then would receive a 30% reduction in. And this would have to be changed to reflect the CS that you adopted, the $8.15 versus the $8.75. But their hourly wage would be or the hourly minimum would be reduced by 30%, so that they would end up making about $20 an hour. With the tip credit in effect. I just showed the $15 an hour here. Anybody that makes $20, $30, $40 an hour in tips, they still would have their minimum wage reduced by a 30% and of course would make substantially more than minimum wage. So that's the spirit and the gist of the amendment. I don't believe it costs anyone anything, and it does help businesses maintain employment and jobs. Has been pointed out, there is some concern that they would have to reduce their wait staff if they indeed had to add the minimum wage on top of the tip wages that they were making, that, as I've said, averaged probably about $20 an hour.
I think just for additionally on the issue of tip credit, one of the issues that was raised with me was the fact that the employer was having to pay the matching Social Security and Medicare on the declared tips. What I also found out is that that law has been modified under IRS Form 8846, where the business now gets a dollar-for-dollar credit so that they are not paying, they suffer no consequence as a result of paying the matching Social Security and Medicare on the declared tips above any minimum wage. So I think that that has been handled on the federal basis. I just think that that's important to understand. So anyway, Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was one of my concerns, and I realize that we did get that straightened around. There's a better understanding of that, and that I could see as potentially an issue, but simply people being paid tips and somebody objecting to that, in many places they share their tips. You know, that might not be the case all the times, but I see this as kind of punitive, unfortunately, to the folks that are not only receiving the tips, but maybe potentially those that share in the tips. And like I said, I realize not all places do that, but I just don't understand the reasoning. If it's not a buck out of the it is a buck in this case, but anyhow, if it's not out of the owner, the restaurant owner, or the hospitality industry's owner's pocket, then I really don't understand the objection to the tipped employees receiving whatever their tips are. They seem to be good advertising. They're obviously being tipped. That I think would encourage people to come back, and I think it encourages new customers. So I see it as a positive rather than somehow people viewing it as a negative. So. Anyhow, just my comment.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the question I'd have is for the maker of the amendment, and I understand that like 45 other states have some sort of tip credit, but I'm curious to know how other states do it, and how did you come up with 30%, you know, versus 10% or 15% or 20%, and I guess I agree with. Senator Thomas here, that you know, if I have a good waiter or waitress, you know, I don't want to penalize them by, you know, them not getting the tip that I leave for them. I want to reward good performance, and in some way here, I think you're taking that motivation out of it.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, well, actually, it's not taking any of their tips away. What it will is reduce the minimum wage that they would have been eligible for. Regarding it isn't anything out of the business owner's pocket. It certainly is. It's a 30%. If this passed, they would pay 30% less of the minimum wage than they're paying now to people who are making $20, $30 an hour. You've heard the complaint that this only helps people who are making more money and doesn't help the people who are making the lower wages. If we don't pass tip credit. Regarding where I got it, I researched other states, and this is a compilation or a combination of what I found other states do.
Any further questions of the committee as to the amendment? What is the will of the committee?
Do you maintain your objection?
I maintain my objection, yes. Okay.
Call the roll.
Vote. Call the roll.
Call, yes. Please call the roll as to
the amendment.
Amendment to the committee substitute.
Senator Meyer?
No.
Senator Bundy?
Yes.
Senator Davis?
No.
Senator Thomas?
No.
Senator Paxton?
No.
Mr. Chairman, I have another conceptual amendment.
Senator Bundy?
Well, you had considerable discussion about what if we had moved forward through inflation, what the minimum wage would have been. Certainly, Senator Wilikowski, in earlier presentation, when I was asking him questions, he pointed out that even with this increase in minimum wage, the recipient of that, if that was their sole source of employment, would still be at the poverty level. I think if you'd have increased it to $8.75, them and slightly above the poverty level, this, haven't figured, but I assume is just at or below the federal poverty level. And as you point out, there was interesting to research what's the justification for setting Alaska's minimum wage and whether it should be like the federal level or above the federal level, how much above the federal level. And there's really not a lot of hard data, so I used an example that is currently active in the legislature here. The legislature has proposed to receive a 50% pay raise, so I have an amendment that would change the minimum from $7.15 to $4.30. And I'll move that amendment and then add some additional information after I move the amendment.
I object. I'm not quite sure I understand what's being said.
Yeah, I didn't understand. Yeah. Conceptually, you lost me.
All right. I have an amendment. Okay. Instead of the dollar more than federal minimum wage, which would make it $8.15, instead of $7.15, my amendment would make the minimum wage at $14.30, double what it is currently, similar to the proposal to double our legislative salary. That seems to be as much precedent as anything. If we would do that, people at minimum wage would make about $570 a week, almost $2,300 a month, or $27,500 a year. That would take them substantially above the poverty level to about current legislative pay levels. And we're concerned about people on minimum wage and not being above poverty level. Here's a chance to make a substantial difference.
There's an objection before the committee, I believe, Senator Thomas.
Yeah, objected. I also, for just to make sure I understand, the people that testified against this the other day were worried about a dollar or a dollar and a half, and so I think they'd be even more concerned if we doubled it. So I certainly wouldn't support that concept, but I do believe that we addressed the issue of at least the major complaints that I had, and I don't think anybody would convince me that the concept of just tips is a bad idea. And I do see in most of the restaurants that I go to that people move up, and people said this was a beginning wage was the reason they had the lower wages for not only the wait staff, but for other people working within the restaurant. And most of the places I go to, I see the people moving from working in the kitchen, washing dishes and busing, to being waiters and moving their way up in the various tasks that exist within a restaurant. So anyhow, I still maintain my objection to that particular amendment.
Just in summary, Mr. Chairman, I'll point out that the current proposal leaves people in poverty, and if you want to take them out of poverty, here's an opportunity to do it.
Yes, Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Probably my last comment on this. The restaurateurs that commented said few of these people were living in poverty. They were making $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000. So I guess we have to take at least some of that factually, anyhow. So, thank you.
With respect to the amendment, if we could call the roll.
Senator Bundy?
Yes.
Senator Davis?
No.
Senator Thomas?
No.
Senator Meyer?
No.
Senator Pastan?
No.
Four yeas, one yea.
All right. I understand that we may have some people off-site that have, is there anyone off-site with respect to public testimony that has not previously testified? You know, we'll I'm willing to open it up to brief public testimony on this if there is someone that has not previously testified.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, would you please identify yourself and state your affiliation?
Al Levinson, restaurant owner, Anchorage.
All right, please provide your testimony.
Well, I had a question regarding the 30% savings that was mentioned to the business owner.
That amendment had
with
failed.
The, how was that figured in?
That amendment failed before the committee.
Okay, so the tax credit is failed at this point.
The tip credit, yes.
Tip credit? Okay. I have no further comment.
All right. And who else is, there a Karsten Rodvik?
That's
oh, that was the person?
No, that's for Centerlink.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Is there anyone else?
Senator, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, my name is Vince Beltrami.
State your affiliation, please.
I'm president of the Alaska AFL-CIO. We represent about 60,000 union members, but today, and we do have a number of members in a couple of our unions that work in the service industry that are much closer to the minimum wage level, and I think I'm speaking on behalf of them and as well as a lot of workers that don't have the benefit of belonging to the unions for representation. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm testifying in support of SB 1. I'm a little disappointed that you've lowered the number to just the dollar over and that you removed the CPI. I guess I understand that's probably what has to happen to have any chance of passage, but I just point out that you know, having CPI in our nearest states in Oregon and Washington has been a good experience for their state, both in terms of jobs and business from my research. Both of those states, as well as others in the area, are well over $8 an hour now. And in recent data, at least, I haven't seen anything that might reflect the current recession, but from the time they passed the increase in Washington up till around 2006, which is the last time I think data was available, they had over a 10% increase in restaurant and bar employment, which kind of punched a hole in the argument that the minimum wage increase was bad for business. And around the country, there's been studies that have shown, other studies have shown no evidence of negative employment effects on small business as a result of increasing the minimum wage. And I just did find a paper put out by the National Employment Law Project, and it speaks to Alaska's tipped employees. I sent it to Senator Wilikowski's office earlier, and I don't know if that ended up in your packets, but at this point it looks like since that amendment failed that there's really no need to get in there and talk about the tip credit, although I would just say that Senator Thomas and Senator Meyer hit the nail on the head when they said that it's punitive to waiters and waitresses, and I certainly would concur, and I'm glad that you didn't pass that. But I, when I first came to Alaska 20 years ago, I worked in the restaurant industry, and I still have a lot of friends that are working in the restaurant industry. It's been a profession for them. It's not just something that teenagers do for a couple of years. There are a lot of people that do make their living you know, working at that minimum wage level, and they do rely on tips. But since the last minimum wage increase in 2003, you know, many of those people had never had an increase except for the 2003 increase, and it's been almost 6 years. And a number of people I went around and talked with, they've still not had an increase in their own wages because the restaurant and bar industry keeps them right at that minimum wage. So basically, in the 5 or 6 years since the previous minimum wage passed, there's been roughly an 18% increase in the cost of living, And these people have not been the benefit, you know, have not seen any benefit of any cost of living adjustments. So, and not only that, but just the increase in pay. I've seen a lot of menu prices go up without. I do understand there's increased costs of business and supplies and stuff like that, but with the employees not getting increases, I'm not sure how negatively impacted the restaurant owners and stuff are. But I would think that with higher wages would result in probably a positive impact of more people being able to go out and spend money and spend it in their establishments. And the folks that would earn this money are the ones that need it the most are going to be the ones that turn around and spend the money in the economy. So I would encourage your passage of SB 1. And I will tell you also that I have drafted and am currently gathering the initial 100 signatures for a ballot initiative to try to push the minimum wage to what was originally proposed in SB 1. But at this point, I would offer support for SB 1 at this stage, and thank you for the opportunity to let me testify.
Thank you, Mr. Beltrami. Or hold on, we may have a question, Senator Bundy.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Beltrami, I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I heard you testify that you thought what we've done here, there should have been higher, and that raising the minimum wage has not had a negative effect on businesses. With that in mind, as a representative of organized labor, could you have supported my amendment that would follow the legislative pay raise model and double the minimum wage?
Well, that, you know, I'm all for seeing pay increases, Senator Bundy, but I think there's a certain element of reasonableness that you'd have a tough time getting anybody to particularly the business community that lined up so strongly against just a little over a dollar increase to get behind that. And understanding that, I don't know how realistic it would have been to expect that you could get passage of that. But, I mean, that's what we do every day is we try to fight for, you know, better wages and benefits and try to distribute that income more to the people that spend it in the economy. So we're always supportive of anything we can do to help raise wages, benefits, and working conditions. But at the same time, I know that you know, there's some things you can get past and some you can't.
Any other questions for Mr. Beltrami? Thank you. I don't know that there's anyone else off-site that has not previously testified. Is there anyone that has not previously testified that's off-site that would like to testify? Is there anyone present here that has not previously testified that would like to testify? Seeing none, we'll close testimony on Senate Bill 1. And I believe now we have the committee substitute for Senate Bill 1 before the Labor and Commerce Committee. And yes, Senator Thomas.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we pass the committee substitute for Senate Bill 1, working draft 26, / E, actually. I don't need to read the rest of it, I guess, from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal note.
And I'll object.
Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Senator Thomas?
Yes.
Senator Davis?
Yes.
Senator Meyer?
Yes.
Senator Bundy?
No.
Senator Passman?
Yes.
One nay, four yeas.
All right. We'll take a very brief at ease, and then we will pick up the ADA bonding, and I thank them for their... Commerce Committee back to order, and we now have before us Senate Bill 84. This is submitted by the request of the governor, and would Mr. Ted Leonard please come forward, please, and assist us in this Senate Bill 84.
Thank you, Chairman. My name's Ted Leonard, and I'm with the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, and I thank you for the opportunity to review Senate Bill 84, and at the pleasure of the chair, I'll go through the sections and answer any questions. Quickly, ADA's mission is to provide various means of financing to promote economic growth and diversification in Alaska. An important way that ADA fulfills its mission is by providing Alaska businesses and nonprofit agencies with access to long-term capital at reasonable cost through our conduit revenue program and through our loan participation program. ADA requested to have this bill introduced in order to amend its statutes to allow the authority the flexibility in how and when it issues bonds, to ensure that the authority obtains the most favorable terms and interest rates it can in order to reduce the overall cost of financing for ADA and Alaskan businesses and nonprofits that use the ADA financing programs. And that would be Section 1 and 2 of the bill. The bill would also assist the mission of the authority by clarifying and ensuring borrowers and development project applicants that certain records and information provided to the authority will be kept confidential, and also set a process to do that. And that's Section 3 through 6 of the bill. Online to provide additional information on the bill, if needed, is Valerie Walker, our CFO, Brian Bjorkvist, our Assistant Attorney General, Chris Anderson, Deputy Director of Credit, and Jim Hemseth, Deputy Director of Development. And Section 1 would amend our bond limitations to exclude refunding and conduit revenue bonds from the $400 million 12-month bond limitation. And that bond limitation is a rolling 12 months and not an annual 12 months. The main types of bonds issued by ADA are general obligation bonds, revenue bonds, conduit revenue bonds, and refunding bonds. And in your packet was a one-page sheet that gave descriptions and definitions of the bonds and how we use them. I could quickly go over that for the committee, if it's your desire.
Would anyone like to have Mr. Leonard go through that? I think it'd be sufficient if you just move forward.
Okay. Well, then quickly I'd go through the refunding and conduit revenue bonds that we're asking to be excluded from this limitation. The refunding bonds are used to refinance and replace existing bond debt. And a good analogy of that is, for example, just like your mortgage, when the rates go down on your mortgage, it's a good time to refinance your mortgage and get the better terms. Refunding bonds are using the same type of definition, that if the terms become more favorable, you can refund those bonds and replace existing debt with new debt with more favorable terms. So in essence, they're self-limiting by the amount of debt that are on books. And refunding bonds can be done on general obligation bonds, the revenue bonds, and on the conduit revenue bonds. The other program that we're asking bonds to be excluded from the $400 million limit is our conduit revenue bonds, which are used in our conduit revenue bond program to provide businesses and nonprofits where ADA acts as the conduit for the issuance of taxable and tax-exempt bonds. ADA has financed 309 projects through this program through over $1.1 billion in conduit revenue bonds. These bonds are payable solely by the project developer, primarily through from the revenue generated from the project. The authority has no financial obligation for the bond debt, neither are the assets nor credit of ADA at risk. One of the prime benefits of this program, if the project developer or the is that if it meets certain criteria, ADA can pass its tax-exempt status to that bond. And only states and municipalities have that ability to do that. So for a nonprofit or a businesses that meet certain IRS regulations, the only way to do this is through a state organization or a municipality. One cap on the amount of bonds that can be issued through that is on the tax exempt side, only 260 million. There's a 260 million annual cap for each state, and that is controlled through the bond committee, the Alaska Bond Committee. And so if ADA is going to issue a tax exempt bond, it has to go to that committee to get approval. So in essence, refunding and conduit bonds help promote the authority's economic development mission without substantially increasing the amount of outstanding authority bond debt. Enactment of this amendment would ensure that the 12-month bond limit would not preclude the authority from issuing debt that would provide the authority and Alaska businesses and nonprofits with more favorable terms and lower capital costs, or limit ADA's conduit revenue bond program providing conduit debt for businesses and nonprofits to finance projects. And that's pretty much the section one. If there's any questions.
Seeing no questions, Mr. Leonard, please. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you're refinancing bonds like that, is there generally a standard charge for doing that, like there is with a home loan, or is it kind of a negotiated process?
It's through the chair to Senator Thomas. It's a negotiated process. There are more fees, and you go through the whole process to reissue that. And part of Section 2 is to clarify that the proceeds from the refunding debt can be used to pay those new issuance fees. So there is some fees included in that, so it does raise the debt, but not substantially. And my CFO is online if you'd like a more.
I'd probably do. Thank you.
Okay.
No further questions.
No further questions. Okay. Thank you, Chair. Section 2, page 1, line 8 through page 2, line 6, amends AS 4499-095. To provide for two recommended changes. The amendment would reinstate the authority's ability to issue bonds that existed before July 1st, 2007 statutory sunset, and would clarify in statute that the authority may use proceeds from the refunding bonds to finance certain costs and expenses associated with the issuance of the refunding bonds. Due to the statutory sunset, ADA currently requires legislative approval to issue any bonds accepting refunding and conduit revenue bonds. Section 2 would eliminate the sunset and enable the authority to again issue most types of bonds without legislative approval. The authority would still require legislative approval to issue GO and revenue bonds in excess of $10 million to assist in financing ADA-owned development projects. And that's under 4488-172. Examples of that would be the Red Dog Mine, where we owned the project and issued bonds. So it would allow us flexibility and to issue financing small projects up to $10 million. But for any large projects, we would still have to come to the legislature.
Senator Bundy.
Yeah, thank you. You mentioned that this would allow you to go back to 2005 and reissue bonds. Is there some statute of limitations that exists now that keeps you from going back, and how far could you go back to reissue?
I'm sorry, through the chair to Senator Bundy.
I'm not sure
if I said 2005, I did not mean to.
I'm sorry, I may have misunderstood.
The sunset happened at July 1st, 2007. So what that would mean is that now we would have the ability to issue those type of bonds like we did before the sunset happened. So we're asking to have our ability back to issue bonds up to 10 million, and then after 10 million, we would still have to come to the legislature.
Okay. Perhaps I misunderstood. All right, thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Leonard. Please continue.
Okay. The second change on this section will clarify how the proceeds from refunding bonds can be used. The amendment will allow the proceeds from the refunding bonds to retire the outstanding bonds, the cost of refinancing, and to fund other costs related to the issuance of the refunding bonds. This sort of goes with what Senator Thomas was saying. In the past, it really did not clarify in the section how you could use the refunding proceeds. So in the past, we actually did, I believe, have to come back to the legislature once to say that we wanted to use the refunding proceeds to also include the refinancing fees for doing the reissuance. And that is all that deals with the bonding side of the ADA statutes. The next sections, 3 through 6, amends the confidentiality of information and also adds a definition to clarify that certain records and information provided to the authority are confidential and establishes a process for the authority to determine that confidentiality. As my deputy directors can testify to, the authority has heard several complaints from borrowers and project developers that AS 4485-215 does not clearly establish that the authority can retain the confidentiality of certain records or information that is essential and proprietary to their businesses. Section 3 clarifies the type of information and records that would be kept confidential and that identifies the specific type of trade secrets that are confidential. And that section is really where the heartburn has been with several of our project developers and loan participants is what is classified as a trade secret. To also strengthen that, in Section 6, it further clarifies existing statutory language by defining trade secrets using the Alaska Uniform Trade Secrets Act, AS 4550-940-3, in the statute's definitions. Then Section 5 establishes a process for ADA to determine which records and information will be kept confidential. Under Section 3 and 5, the applicant must request confidentiality, make an adequate showing to the executive director that the records and information should be kept confidential. Based on that request, the executive director would make a determination on whether or not the records and information meet the statutory criteria for confidentiality. The process will provide greater assurance to the applicants that certain information and records will be kept confidential. And I think the important thing, as Jim and Chris could testify to, is that it also does that at the start of the process. It pretty much lists what would be confidential, but then there could be going through the public records process some questions on the confidentiality.
If I could just hear a little more from either yourself or the executive director on what standard or what template does the determination of confidentiality, how is it determined? You know, okay. In other words, I assume it's some standard template or...
You bet. And I think the best person to do that would be our assistant AG, Brian Bjorkquist, if he's online.
For the record, I am Brian Bjorkquist. I'm a senior assistant attorney general with the Department of Law. The standard that is applied under Section 4488-215A, I don't think would change from what the standard is under existing law. There are certain specific types of information that are confidential, not public records, and they're listed in items 1 through 8, income tax returns, financial statements, profit and loss statements, et cetera. The showing that would have to be made is by the applicant is that the document in question fits within what is listed under the statute. They would have to demonstrate that it's an income tax return. or a financial statement. They'd have to demonstrate that it is one of the listed documents.
So if a document is submitted with a request that it be confidential, if the executive director determines it's not confidential, then the business owner or the project developer can withdraw before it becomes public?
Exactly.
Okay.
Brian, is that true? I better...
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bundy.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Bjornquist, just trying to cover all the bases here, assuming that there was someone in the public felt that, things were labeled confidential that didn't meet the statutory requirements, would there be a recourse through the Freedom of Information Act, or would they require a court suit? What would happen if a member of the public said, you guys are covering up stuff that doesn't fall within the category of confidentiality?
Through the chair, Senator, under this statute, the executive director would make a determination at the time that the document was presented by the applicant. That would be a determination of confidentiality that would only give the requester a greater assurance that it would in fact be found to be confidential. In the process of the public records request, there would be an opportunity for a challenge to be made to that, but because a determination had already been made by the executive director, there would be a heavier burden to overcome it.
Thank you. So if Mr. Erickson wanted information about a project, it's possible to get that information. It's just a little higher barrier right now if we do this.
Through the chair, Senator, yes. And I would also point out that under the legislation as it exists currently, the list of types of documents that an applicant presents to ADA are defined by law not to be public records. And so just to be more clear on my previous answer, the question would be whether under the statute the document actually fits the statutory definition and is not a public record under the Public Records Act, but that arises in the context of a public records request.
Thank you.
Mr. Leonard, please continue then.
To the chair, I would believe the last one would be Section 8, which would make the act effective on July 1st, 2009. That's
all right. Any questions from the committee of Mr. Leonard? Any further questions of Mr. Bjorkquist, Senator Thomas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one, Mr. Leonard. Was there a reason for looking back at policy here and statute regarding the refunding bonding, or was it just a look back at things and trying to make things equal, or was there some issue or problem that arose that caused you to want to go back and revisit these?
Through the chair to Senator Thomas, and I'd have to go to Valerie, but a few years back we almost did reach that limitation that would have stopped a bonding project or a issuance of a bond for the limitation based on that $400 million limitation. And we're actually also looking forward as the bond market, we hope, starts to smooth and rates go down again, that we probably would have maybe some bonds that we would like to reissue that are variable right now, and we assume that also people in our program would also want to reissue bonds. So we're hoping as the economy, when it starts to pick up and the rates go back down on municipal bonds, that $400 million limitation could become a problem in the future.
Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to follow up on your comment there, what are we paying now for a bond generally? What percent?
ADA is not a, as it says in the one-page description, does not have the moral obligation of the state. So our bonding right now is, Valerie, if you could back me up on this, about 8% on taxable, and we haven't issued a tax-exempt bond in a while. The last I heard was the state did a double A one for the prison, and that was 5.99 in December. But the rates are still fairly high for ADA right now. We've been told by our experts that hopefully May, June, that the rates may start to come down, but it's still fairly hard to issue a municipal bond right now, or a state bond.
Yeah, it sure has changed a lot in a year's time, because I know this time last year when we were sitting on a pile of cash and debating whether or not to do road bonds versus just using cash, and we were able to borrow, it seemed like, at about 4%, and we were able to save at about 14%. So it just seemed to make sense at the time to go ahead and bond. I do have a question, though, since, you know, things do change so quickly. I frankly like the sunset clause in the sense that who knows what's going to happen 3, 4, or 5 years now, and a lot of us won't be here at that time. Why do you want to remove the sunset clause?
Through the chair to Senator Meyer. The reason why, I would think, is that there are several options or ways that ADA does work with the legislature. We do provide an annual report. We do go through the budget process. For me, I guess the flexibility of ADA losing one of its major tools, or the possibility every 5 years or 3 years, is the reason we're looking for not having the sunset. I mean, it's no problem for ADA to work with the legislature, but it is one of our main tools for doing our mission. I'm sure
that the Finance Committee will have a lot more discussion on that, but the ADA dividend that we get or have been getting the last few years is help fund the capital budget and just our budget in general. So I think the legislature is going to want to, you know, still have their, unfortunately, have their some oversight into your business. So personally, I'd like to see the sunset clause stay, but that's a topic for discussion later.
Through the chair to Senator Meyer, ADA has no problem or saw that the sunset clause would be the way for legislative oversight. We still believe that the budget process does that too, and we definitely do see the value in ADA's dividend to the state.
Any further questions of Mr. Leonard? I know we have a number of people that were off-site, but apparently this is Chris and Jim and Valerie and Karsten. Apparently no questions of the committee of them. Are there any others off-site that want to testify in any way regarding this Senate Bill 84, or that are present here? We'll close public testimony on Senate Bill 84 then, and we will hold Senate Bill 84 just because I said we were going to do that at the beginning, and it is 3 o'clock right now. And so thank you, Mr. Leonard, for Senator Davis.
Roger, you go, and I'd just like to say to Mr. Leonard, I thank you very much for taking the time to come by and bring me up to speed on this bill. It really was helpful.
All right, seeing nothing further from the committee, the Labor and Commerce Committee on February 24th is closed.